You're with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Greetings, truth seekers, paradigm busters, new world order, civil disobedience, freedom fighters, free thinkers, higher mammals, good people of all types. How's it going? It's Michael Parker coming to you as always from an undisclosed location somewhere in sunny Los Angeles, California. The myth maker for civilization, where it's another beautiful day of government overreach and skyrocketing petty crime. How's it going? Wherever you are in the world, I hope you're having a good day or a good evening. Here on Deprogram, all we're looking for is the answers to everything. Is that too much to ask? I don't think so. That's what we're doing. And today we got a big show, got a lot going on today. I'm going to be joined in just a second by my friend Donald Bull. And on every Friday, we try to take a look at entertainment. There's some interesting things happening and a couple of sad stories as well. Before we get to that, we've got to break a little news, which you may or may not have heard already. And of course, now that I'm looking for it, basically, Salman Rushdie was attacked today. And of course, now I can't find my story. Here it is. Here it is. So Salman Rushdie, for those of you who may not remember, back in the 80s, in 1988, Salman Rushdie was an author. He was born Muslim. He wrote a book. And it upset the Ayatollah Khomeini, and there was a fatwa put on him. I believe the book was called The Satanic Verses. Of course, now I can't find it in my notes. But anyway, it was a really big deal in the 80s. It was such a big deal, like U2 started hanging out with him and, you know, writing songs kind of about him and that. And it was a big deal. And but, you know, he was born a Muslim. So that has followed him around ever since. And at one point there were fatwas on his neck for upwards of, there was several different ones. At one point, it even got up to around $4 million. And a fatwa means, you know, they're calling for your death. So he hid out for many years and he was kind of a celebrity. And he was a good author. He was a serious author. Anyway, he was going to do this speech today in Chautauqua, New York, at the Chautauqua Institution, which I'm not sure what that is exactly, but he was on stage. He was preparing to speak. A man rushed the stage and stabbed him 10 to 15 times. The assailant was detained. There was a law enforcement officer there, but apparently there was only one. And so some people that were witnessing it at first, and I'm going to have Kent Moyer back on so we could talk about this, because he's a security specialist for celebrities and people like that here in LA. And we've talked about this before in the case of people that have rushed the stage recently. But in this case, the audience, when they saw it happen, the guy rushes the stage and they thought it was, is this a prank? Is this, you know, is this performance art, whatever? Well, it wasn't. He beats Rushdie. He stabs him multiple times. He is apprehended. Rushdie was then flown to a medical facility, and as far as I know, he was being operated on, but is still alive. So, you know, this is a sad story, because we're in a place now where people, you know, whether you're a comic, you're a writer, you're an actor, or, you know, used to be, we worried about politicians being attacked. Now we have to worry about anyone who's on a public stage potentially being attacked. And, you know, we've talked about this on the show many times. One of the things that makes me sad is the lack of civility, that this just spiraling madness that we found ourselves in now. And so at this point, I don't know if we know what the motive of the attacker was. I would guess it's a person still bent out of shape about the Satanic Verses, or maybe he was wanting to cop the $4 million fatwa fee. We don't know. Or maybe it's just a person that's mentally ill. But anyway, we wish Salman Rushdie a fast recovery, and we hope that we can learn from this. And whoever put this speaking engagement on, when you invited Salman Rushdie to speak, I think it would have behooved you to have more than one security guard or law enforcement person on the premises. So we're going to have to step up our game and not cut corners on these kind of things, because clearly we are in a state of high excitability and irritability in the populace now. And it's a sad thing. And like I say, I and Deprogram and TNT, we wish Salman Rushdie a quick recovery. Ladies and gentlemen, if you guys like what we do here at TNT, please follow us on social media. We're on all of the big ones. I mean, you're already on social media anyway, for the most part, right? So find us. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on Getter. We're on Gab. We're on... if there's one that matters, we're probably on us, and it would be easy to find us, and we would love for you to join us and tell us what you like that we do. Tell us what you wish we'd do different. Tell us who you'd like to hear us speak to. Or if there's a topic or something, we'd love to hear from you, because we do all this for you here at TNT Radio.
Searching for the facts.
I just don't think they're being honest with
today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks. So it is Friday. So I am joined by Donald Bull, best known as the creator and executive producer of Dr. 90210, which was a big hit on E! And Style for 7 seasons, 85 episodes, no mean feat. Aired in 26 countries, also produced the spinoff. You guys, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Donald was part of the Real World, Road Rules, Bug Juice, Class Reunion, Making the Band, the Osbournes. It goes on. Good to see you, Donald. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Michael. Thanks for having me back. I love being
here. I'm glad you're here. And not to start the show off on a double downer, but also right before I came on, I just read that Ann Haitch has passed away.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that was, whether that was suicide by car. Who knows?
Yes.
I feel bad for the woman. In other bad news, just 2 days ago, maybe it was 3 days ago, early in the morning around 6 a.m., I heard a police helicopter over our house, which is an LA phenomenon. We often hear the police helicopters. 4.5 blocks from my home, up by the Los Angeles River. A homeless person was stabbed to death, you know? So, I mean, and I live in one of the nicest neighborhoods in LA.
Yes.
With industry people on both sides of the street, Emmy Award winners, heads of development of Fox, you know, and the civility and the infrastructure of our country is falling apart. And there's enough homeless people that are struggling and on drugs, then they're stabbing each other while our homes are skyrocketing in price. You know, so we've got to get something under control. And I'm not sure how many people have to die before that happens. But that's what's going on, Michael.
Let me give you a quick antidote, Donald. And that's a terrible story, but you mentioned the skyrocketing home prices. It's like yesterday, well, a couple of days ago, we occasionally get these, and I know you do too. So I get this letter in the mail from one of the local realtors. He's part of the agency, which is, I can't remember the man's name. He's married to one of the gals in Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. But anyway, occasionally we get these, and we're not special, you guys. If you live in a halfway decent neighborhood in Los Angeles, you're going to get letters from realtors. And, actually it was an email, because we get the letters and the emails, and this guy's emailed me a few times, and he's part of the agency. And he asked me about, you know, hey, we have a client wants to move into your neighborhood. Would you be interested in selling your house? We get these all the time. I talk to my wife, and just for the hell of it, because no, we can't really sell our house right now, because if we were to sell our house, then where do we move? You know, we got 2 dogs, 2 cats, we got 2 grown children, and there's just no place to move into, you know. But anyway, I was like, well, you know, what the hell? I'll just tell the guy, you know what? 1.6, and we might talk. So what does he do? He emails me back, says, that sounds great. When can we come over? And I was like, so this morning I had to email him back. Like, you know what? We've had second thoughts. It's my daughter's senior year. You know, it's because the truth of the matter is, Donald, it's like, even if we sold our home, like then where do we go? Because renting right now is, you can't do that. It's very difficult to do that, especially when you've got animals like we do. But that's just how crazy it is, folks. And when I say that number I just said, ladies and gentlemen, I live in an extremely modest home. I'll just live in a plain Jane, 1600 square foot home. Nothing to write. It's nothing spectacular, but that's how crazy real estate is in LA.
That's right. And if you move out of California after you sell your house, you're never going to get back in the market again. And because of the way property taxes are arranged, I live in a house that I was built in 1940, and we have been in here for over 25 years, and our property taxes are around $5,000 a year. The house next door, which is twice the square footage and 2 stories, a McMansion, they pay $20,000 a year. And, you know, if my daughter inherits my house, she will inherit my house at my current property tax rate gradually increasing 1% a year. But nonetheless, there are people, I mean, it's creating a landed gentry in the United States or in California where, hey, my family's owned this house for three generations and we barely pay tax on it. Why would we ever give it up? Anyway, we're not talking about entertainment, but that's what's going on. So there you go.
Well, but and you know what? But it is kind of part, people that want to move to LA, that's one of the reasons that even in hard times, real estate in LA manages to still be desired. First of all, it's a finite resource. You can't build any more space. And people that want to work in the industry, they would like to live close to where they work. So the neighborhoods that Donald and I live in, which are nice neighborhoods, but, you know, just middle American neighborhoods, are highly desirable. And sometimes what they want to do is they just want to knock your house down and they build a McMansion. But anyway, so it's just one of those funny things. Because I looked up our house on Zillow and I was like, all right, well, I'm going to add some math onto that. And surely they'll say that's not something we'd want to do, but I was wrong.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's talk about my last weekend.
Please.
A week ago, I went to see Bullet Train.
Ooh,
and I started out hating it, and then I ended up loving it. So
really?
I'll tell you why. I just relaxed into it, and I let the ride take over. And I literally mean ride, because I went to see it at the Regal Theaters close to our homes, and they have something called 4DX, which is not IMAX, it's 4DX. And what it is the seats move like a roller coaster ride.
Awesome.
Now, however, for a middle-aged dude like me, I'm sitting there and it is shaking on every single movement. There's a moment where one of the bad guys takes a sticker and sticks it on somebody else's forehead. It's just a sticker with a thumb. They shake you like you've been punched in the face.
Really?
So it is shaking me up and down. And it was like a bad roller coaster ride. Then I said to my daughter, Lily, I said, do you want to move, change theaters? Do you want to go see a later show in the other theater? She just shook her head and she looked at me like, you blew it, Dad, but I'm not going to leave.
How did she feel about that? Was it too much?
She got in
stimulation.
It was a little too much, but then after a while, okay, just like somebody hitting you in the head with a hammer, you get used to it. So I got used to it. The other thing about it is it's a complicated story with a bunch of assassins on a train.
Yeah.
Now, with a lot of action adventure movies, you got to get the exposition out of the way, like, why are we here and what's going on, even though the plot is convoluted. So we call it laying pipe. It's like doing the infrastructure, setting out the exposition. Like you and I in our movie together, Michael, as you already know, alien technology came to our planet several decades ago, and we have kept it secret, even though you are a governing agent like me. Now, what we've done is we've cracked the code about how the alien technology works, and we've built a robot. It's like, dude, you already know that. We're just doing that for the audience. And if you do it badly, it sucks. So the problem is that in the beginning, they have these two characters, great characters, named Tangerine and Lemon, played by Aaron Taylor Johnson and Brian Tyree Henry, two English guys. They're laying a lot of pipe. They're doing a lot of exposition. Why are we on this train? Who's this guy? He's kidnapped. We rescued him. There's a briefcase full of money. And for 10 minutes, I'm just going like, I'm bored. What's going on? The seats are shaking. But then once that was over, I got into it. There were a lot of laughs. Brad Pitt was hilarious. He's setting himself up. It was funny. But it reminded me, the guy who's the absolute best at laying pipe, that's what we call it, is Alec Baldwin. That's my opinion.
Is he in this movie, or you just mean in other movies?
No, in other movies, like in the Mission Impossible movies, he played the secretary to the Impossible Missions Force. So he's the guy who's walking along with Ethan Hunt, played by
Tom Cruise.
By Tom Cruise, and he's going, this is your mission. what you got to do is there's these bad guys doing this. There's these bad guys doing that. There's a secret force. There's an alien. There's also a nuclear bomb about to go off. Here's the file. This is what you got to do. And Alec Baldwin is walking down a tarmac while planes are zooming past him and helicopters taking off and Ethan Hunt stopping and handing him a secret document and a new toy that is going to explode in somebody's face. And Alec Baldwin does it. He does it perfectly. You can't stop watching him. He's clear. He's concise. And you go like, I'll watch that again. That was really cool. Look at that elaborate shot. He can lay pipe better than anybody. But anyway, that was my opinion. So that was my opinion of the movie. There you go there.
Well, you know what? This is a perfect time for us to stop for our first break. I speak with Donald Bull. We're talking about the entertainment industry, what's going on in L.A., and this is TNT. This is Deprogrammed. This is a Friday. The weekend is upon us. I like that. We'll be right back.
You should hear what Rick Munn's talking about.
In England. Oh, yes. England. Good old England, eh? Good old Blighty. Well, well, well. Guess what? There's a recession. And we're in the middle of it. And it's going to get worse. As predicted. Not doom merchants. Not gloom merchants. Not prophets of doom. Simply joining the dots. Yes, we like to join the dots at TNT Radio. We get a lot of flack for it, but hell's bells, eventually the media come around and even the governor of the Bank of England comes around and validates the things that we have been hypothesizing for the previous several months. Bank of England governor defends rate hike ahead of looming recession. So he's whacking the interest rates up in the UK by 0.5 percentage point, which is the biggest single rise in decades. The UK economy is to be in recession for more than a year. Listen, it's going to be a heck of a lot more than a year. This ain't going away within 12 months. This is just the beginning.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
Get to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1, How We Got Here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free
from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
This is Deprogram. I'm speaking with Donald Bull, and we were just talking about Bullet Train. Donald, I just wanted to throw in one other thing about the Bullet Train, and you were talking about that 4DX or whatever they're calling it at that particular theater. I like that theater, by the way. It's, ladies and gentlemen, for just some inside baseball, it's a new theater close to Donald and I's part of town in a new kind of development, and it's kind of underused right now, which I love. I don't know how busy it was the night you were there, but the 4X seats, like my wife, she's like, not doing it. And like we should just give it a shot. But like, you just reinforced why she doesn't want to do it.
Exactly. the next day, Robin and I watched, we paid for it on Apple TV. We watched Everything Everywhere All at Once, and? Which is this crazy over the top. Well, I loved it. It is a 2022 American absurdist comedy drama film written and directed by Daniel Kwan and Daniel Schienert, collectively known as the Daniels, who produced it with the Russo brothers. And those are the guys who directed a lot of the big Marvel Captain America movies and things like that. It's made $100 million movie. It made $100 million around the world.
I didn't even realize that.
I watched it. I liked it. Robin said it was the worst movie she ever saw. And I was cracking up because she was cracking one-liners during the entire thing. It is absurdist crazy, but yes, it's got parallel universes and people, you know, having more than one personality and more than one universe. And it is crazy. It makes a point. And Robin said it could have made the point a lot shorter with a lot less going on. But, you know, that's one more thing that we're talking about. The other thing that's going on in the news this week is, like, as we talked about last week, Batgirl got axed, even though it's finished, and there's a lot of reasons for that. One of the real reasons that is coming out now is that Warner Brothers Discovery, so these are two companies that got together, Warner Brothers and the Discovery Networks, they have been buying and selling each other over the course of the last couple of years, and they are $50 billion in debt. That's what they estimate, at least according to this one news article I read. So when you're thinking about that, they can't really afford to spend money on something that could lose them money. You can't spend $20 million on marketing, let's just say, and hope that over the next 5 years, you're going to get $90 million back. They just got to get it off their books. At the same time, this week, there's a movie called The Flash, which is another DC movie. And you've heard about Ezra Miller, who is the star of The Flash. He's been in trouble for a lot of naughty reasons. We talk about naughty people on this show a lot.
Yep.
He's got enough naughtiness in his history, some really weird stuff, that they may just take the $90 million movie, The Flash, that has more than one Batman as a side character in it, and they may just shelve that and never release it.
Wow. I did not. I knew that he, okay, Ezra Miller, complicated character. I don't know much about the guy, but the things that I've read about him, it's like, brother, get your act together. But I did read, because there was a situation where he had a young girl kind of with him for a while. But then I read this past week, he gets busted for burglary or whatever. And if they put the film away over that,
He's a complicated guy. I'll read really quick. He was a rising star in Hollywood. He was supposed to be a queer blockbuster movie star, a flower child eccentric who lives in Vermont and plays the Flash, and an activist who stood up for victims of gender-based violence and indigenous communities. Instead, the real-life Ezra Miller, 2020's Ezra, in a different kind of person who would be caught on video physically attacking a fan, rumored to be leading a cult, accused of grooming an 18-year-old Sioux activist. Miller went from indie darling to getting Harry Potter paychecks to facing felony burglary charges in quite a flash. So that's a problem. And, you know, that's what's in
that is a problem.
Week. So, you know, and there you go. That's what's going on. There's, you know, I'm not sure what you think about that.
Well, I didn't even know that there was going to be a Flash movie. I mean, I knew that he was in the DC universe, and I had seen him in one of those ensemble DC things. But I don't know if I knew that there was going to be a movie about the Flash.
Well, yeah, it's DC's trying to be like Marvel, and they're doing something huge. In good news, here's some good news. I think you know about this already. Southern Methodist University's football and men's basketball athletes will soon receive a salary. Now, this has been a controversy in the United States for a long time. The Boulevard Collective, an NIL, name, image, likeness collective, is set to pay players $36,000 a season, according to sports media company On3. And the NCAA makes a ton of money off these athletes, and so do the universities. So now, actually, it's the beginning of...
I was just going to say, did you say Southern Methodist University or USC? Because I heard something about this for USC this week.
Well, maybe something similar that's happening. You know, this was days ago.
But it was definitely SMU?
I'm reading. Yeah, I just stole this right off the internet. Southern Methodist University.
Doesn't surprise me.
You know, and so now, and it's about time, really. I mean, they make so much. You know, by the time you hit the NCAA or the Sweet 16 for basketball, there's so much money being made. And some of these athletes are great athletes, so they're going to turn pro. But the vast majority of college athletes, their time in the sun will end when they graduate. It's just a numbers game. So they deserve especially when you're going to put their name and likeness on a jersey or on a baseball cap or whatever it is that you're going to do. These guys deserve to be paid.
That is interesting. We've been talking a lot on the show in the last couple of weeks about the possible relief of student loans and just talking about the whole things having to do with campus atmospheres right now and the way universities are run. And the coaches of some of these teams are, you know, they've got multi-million dollar contracts. And to your point, yes, these teams can sometimes transform the community that they're in and bring in a huge amount of tourism dollars and just additional income, not only to the university, but to the city around them. And then the people that are making all that work are those athletes. So it is probably time that they get their share. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick minute or two for news, and we'll be right back with Donald Bull here on Deprogram.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Indian traders have reportedly been settling payments for Russian coal in an effort to skirt Western sanctions imposed on Moscow in recent months in response to its latest war with Ukraine. American solar energy companies are having difficulty complying with a law that went into effect in June, requiring importers to prove their goods are not tainted with slave labor from the oppressed Uyghur Muslims of China's Xinjiang province.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
Donald, one last thing on the Everything Everywhere. So my oldest daughter, who sometimes keeps your lovely pet, she loved that movie. I mean, and I have another friend who's like, man, that's my favorite movie of all time. Ann and I saw it at the Regal. We enjoyed it. We didn't love it as much as Nico loved it, but she thought it was great. So it's definitely worth people's while. And if you're one of those people that, some people won't enjoy it, and I don't necessarily mean this for Robin, but there's some people who just don't want to go out on a limb like this, which I think Robin likes to go out on a limb occasionally, like we do. But some people, it won't be their cup of tea. And it's for imaginative types that, because I even, there was right, a couple of points, there was a couple of points where I was like, okay, that was a little too much, but I still enjoyed it.
I agree, you know, and what am I doing? I'm watching it on a streaming service at home, rented it for $5.99 for 48 hours. I'm not going.
Beautiful.
You know, Bullet Train, let's face it, Bullet Train was $40 for two tickets. We didn't have to pay to park, but, you know, if we had bought like a snack, it would have been $45 to $50. It was a great ride with my daughter. It was experience. We got to spend time together. I would have not felt the same way about this movie if I'd spent that much money, but right. It was worth it. I enjoyed it. A lot of people are saying, you know, what's great about it that you don't see often is there's a deep mother-daughter conflict and resolution in the movie. And yes. You don't see that very often. And the message is very powerful about mothers and daughters. And that's where I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from people about why the movie works for them. And it's set in this madness, but it's true. It's a very powerful message. So I got something else to tell you.
I'm ready.
I'm going to talk about reality TV a little bit in the job that I'm finishing just now. And,
please.
You know, I'm just finishing up a season of Married at First Sight, which is a reality show where people meet each other at the altar after having been set up. Now, people think that this is an outrageous conceit, but at the same time, there are many cultures around the world that have very successful marriages based upon people having an arranged marriage. And I had a friend from India that I went to college with, and he was being set up, a well-to-do family from India, and his parents had picked, with his permission, a bride to marry. And everybody around us were telling him, like, why are you doing this? This is ancient. This is what a weird custom, you know? And he said to me and to the other people in our group, he said, listen, my parents know me and they love me and I love my parents and I trust them. Who better to help me pick my wife than my own parents? They have a successful marriage. They know what will work for me. They they're thinking about me in the long run. I trust their choices. And so like I had nothing in terms of me judging his culture. There was nothing that I could say about it. But anyway, one thing that I like about this show and certain reality shows, put it this way, Bullet Train has a very high body count. There's blood and assassination. Yeah. There's so many dead bodies that in another era when I was younger, it may have gotten an X rating in terms of over the top violence as a form of pornography. It is outrageous. Yes. Now, we become inured to it and desensitized to it, but there's no doubt if this movie had been made in 1972, it may have gotten an X rating. Now, when I'm doing Married at First Sight, these young people who are married, they're on vacation, they're on a honeymoon together. And the wives sit down, the new wives sit down, and you think like they're going to talk about something inane, you know, like, have you made it with your husband yet or whatever? And somebody says, what are you most afraid of that your husband will find out? Are you told him everything about yourself? And one woman says, I'm afraid to tell him how much student debt I have. Wow. And the other woman in the conversation goes, oh my God, I'm in exactly the same position. And suddenly I'm editing a scene about a modern problem that didn't exist when I was young. It exists for so many young people, and it's a terrifying concept. I don't have health insurance, and I have over $30,000 in student debt. My husband or my boyfriend thinks that I'm a liability. I don't know if anybody's going to want me. How am I going to be able to pay this money back? Welcome to 2022. You don't see it in media at all. It's not being reflected in stories. And so that story right there, I love that in this show, we were having a real life situation where that became a dramatic scene that I can put out there that everybody, so many people relate to, and nobody's head is getting blown off. So that's one good thing about it.
And Donald, you're right. That's not something that I've seen in any popular media, yet it's a huge thing that affects a lot of people. We've talked a lot about it, the pros and cons of all this on the show, and that is such an interesting aspect in this show. And I got to say, like, if I married somebody and then I found out they had, you know, $30, $50, $75, $100,000 worth of college debt, I would be a little freaked out.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to somebody that you're in love with saying to them, listen, I have a chronic illness that may cost over $100,000. You know, and plus with interest, you know, because we're going to have medical bills, it could be $150,000 over the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And it's going to affect the kind of home we could afford to buy. It's like, you may not want to marry that person. It really does affect. And Michael, this is a separate issue, but the reason it's in media, it needs to be in media, because let's face it, some of these private universities, they are tax. In other words, they don't pay taxes. And they're making money off of middle-class people like you and me who are mortgaging their homes to send our kids to college, you know, and then they still have student debt and they're so effing rich.
Donald, that's essentially my point, because when we've discussed this on the show before, and I've talked to college professors and we've talked about this thing, listen, I don't wish anybody a huge amount of debt. It's just that instead of relieving all that debt, I wish that universities had to do business like other businesses do. It's like, cut the fat, trim some of that administration, don't give football coaches $10 million deals or whatever it is, so you can bring your costs down. And I'm afraid that if we relieve the student debt, or what's the word I'm looking for here, remove it or what have you, when does it stop? When does it start? When does it stop? And how do you deal with the people that have already paid and maybe spent 20 years of their life? So it's a complicated issue, but my main concern is just that I'm afraid that it's going to allow universities to do exactly what you're saying. It's like, we just raise the prices some more because now these debts will be removed or relieved. So I wish they would just be more fiscally responsible on their end.
I agree. I mean, we could go into it in a bigger way, but let's keep it to media. Mm-hmm. In yesterday's newspaper, there is a new movie that has this as one of the plot points.
Really?
And it's the only other movie where, yeah, it's supposedly a great movie. I want to go see it. It's called Emily the Criminal. It's a first feature by a young filmmaker named John Patton Ford. There's a young woman who's the star of it who plays Emily the Criminal. And her mm-hmm. name's Aubrey Plaza. And she's in every scene. Yeah, go ahead.
And she's pretty hot. Aubrey? And she... Yes, she is. She's been kind of one of those it girls for a while amongst the nerd kind of community. She's very attractive and she's interesting and she's very intelligent.
And the movie is supposed to be intelligent in the same kind of way. I mean, Aubrey Plaza is playing this character named Emily, and Emily is a person who's didn't finish art school, so she went to get either an art degree, a master's, or an undergrad at art school, is $70,000 in debt, made a mistake as a young woman and had somebody press charges for her against her for assault, maybe for hitting somebody in a nightclub or something like that. And so she's got this conviction against her that can't be wiped from her record. So she's having trouble getting employment. She can't finish her education. She doesn't have a degree. She has $70,000 in debt. And so she's bitter. She's angry about the system, about college, about predatory capitalism, which is what we're talking about with these universities. So this young filmmaker has created a story about what we're talking about. And what Genius. Does she do? She becomes, you know, a thief and a criminal. In other words, what is she doing? She's not doing it to become rich. She's doing it to pay off her $70,000 college debt. So I got to go see the movie. It's like, it is of the time. I mean, that's the era that we're living in. And that's much more appealing to me. Bullet Train's a great movie. It's a joyride. It's a freak show. It's fun. It's silly. But it's the high body count doesn't reflect what's going on in my life. This does.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying about the John Wick thing. Like, I watched it at home one time. I watched the first one, and it was enjoyable. But, I mean, listen, even Tarantino, who he changed the game. But, you know, I can do without. I mean, it's like we dialed out. If you dial back the violence, like, halfway, I'd be fine with that. It's like, imply it like Hitchcock did. The Aubrey Plaza choice for this role that you just described, that is spot on, because she kind of has this dark kind of sarcastic mystique to her. She's attractive. So the movie that you're describing, I think that's a really, I want to see it now. I think that's a really good role for her kind of persona.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. I'm gonna find out some more about it. The Emmys are voting for the Emmys. This is a multi. We talk about it every second week. The Emmys are going to be broadcast on September 12th, and we've talked about some of the shows that are going to be nominated. One thing that I want to point out that's true is that, really, in many ways, the Emmys, at least inside Hollywood, are a bit of a popularity contest.
Yes.
We all want to get nominated. We all tell our friends to nominate us. We nominate them. It's sort of like high school. We're all voting again. Who's the most popular? Who's most likely to succeed? It has that feeling. Even our production companies are telling us, okay, if you're a member of the Academy or from this particular guild, this is how we want you to vote. You know, they tell you flat out. And if they're hoping that one of your episodes gets nominated, of course you're going to vote for that. But what ends up happening is, like, I have a friend named Margarita Pigeon. And she was head of hair and makeup for Our Flag Means Death, which was this hilarious show on, I think it's on Netflix. It might be on HBO Max. It's on HBO Max. And it's this pirate movie series, sort of absurdist. And pirates, so you can imagine, it's big wigs in the hot sun, tons of makeup, big costumes. And she had to make all these wigs by hand for, along with her team, for dozens of people. And her work was exemplary. It was just so good. And so many people thought it was great, but the show wasn't a huge success. And because it wasn't popular, and because it is a popularity contest, other shows that, in my opinion, don't have as much good work in it end up being nominated, while her show and her work get sort of overlooked. So you always have to take the Emmys with a little bit of a grain of salt. You know, same with the Oscars a little bit. I'm not as much in that game, so I don't know as much, but that's how I feel about the Emmys.
Well, I think award shows in general are kind of like that. And now we have so many different types, I mean, of award shows. I mean, just in like the music genre, I mean, my God, I don't even know how many music award shows there are now. And they kind of create award shows for different genres as well. And like my wife and my daughters, they love to watch these things, and they'll be watching the Emmys, I'm sure. And, you know, I think if people, you know, you just kind of accept it for what it is. It's like, look, the Taylor Swift's going to win a bunch of awards most likely. And if you love Taylor Swift, that's great. If you don't, well, you know, you can still see it coming. Doesn't mean it's good, bad, or it just is what it is. And so the Emmys, I'm sure it'll be a big hit in our house. I'm looking at the clock. We got to take our final break. I'm speaking with Donald Bull. And I think when we come back, I want to ask Donald a couple of questions, because he's saying that he's finishing up a show. So now, what does that mean next? This is TNT. We'll be right back.
The midterms, and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
While FBI jackbooted thugs marching through Mar-a-Lago sucked up all the oxygen yesterday, two big primary races were decided. Trump-endorsed former Green Beret Joe Kent got the nod to represent Republicans in November's general election in Washington State's 3rd congressional district after incumbent never-Trumper Jamie Herrera Butler conceded. The district leans heavily Republican, so Joe has a great opportunity to return conservative representation to the people of Washington State. In yesterday's marquee matchup for the gubernatorial nomination in Wisconsin, Trump-endorsed businessman Tim Michaels defeated Mike Pence-endorsed Rebecca Clefish. In this proxy battle between the president and his former vice president, the vice president has yet to win a single race. Mike, maybe it's time to hang it up. Don't run in 2024. Let America first. Take America back. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
In times of fear, World Vision is there for the most vulnerable. For the last 70 years, we've been standing with kids and families through natural disasters, war, and disease, delivering life-saving aid and helping rebuild lives. And with every act of courage, faith, and love, we do more than just stop the spread of fear. We replace it with hope. Learn more at worldvision.org.
This is where you get your daily ration of high-velocity conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
You know, when I first started doing this show, and Donald was one of my first guests, and we've known each other for a long time, one of the first things we were talking about in the show is we wanted to tell people that wanted to get into the business kind of how the business works, because it's a business that has its own way of working. And a lot of times you'll go to college, you get a job, and depending on how long you want to stay with the job, you stay with that job for that amount of time that you want to be there, or unless you get laid off or something like that. In television and in production and things like what Donald has spent his life doing, sometimes you go from job to show to show. And Donald just mentioned that he's ending a current show that he's been working on, I think, for quite some time. So my question is, and if this is too personal, you don't want to tell me, that's cool, but I'm not sure, because but do you already have your next gig lined up, or how does that work? So, and Donald, everybody knows Donald. So Donald, his reputation precedes him, but if you're hearing our voices, just know if you come out here to do some of these kind of things, you're going to have to hustle.
Yeah, and the hustle never ends. I don't think anybody should deceive themselves that any industry is any different. I have a friend who's a lawyer, and you know, he's got an office that he's got to cover. Like, it's him and his partner have to come up with $20,000 a month in terms of just paying for office space. Yep. So that when you go in there as a client, you go like, yeah, this is a real author. I mean, a real lawyer. I got to get this guy to represent me. So, you know, and you know, they have months where they don't have any work, and they have other months where they're taking off. But what's happening with the show that I'm on now, which I really enjoy doing, Married at First site. Months ago, they told me, you know, depending upon how the edit schedule works, you're either going to end your show around August 15th or August 21st. I wanted August 21st because I got a bunch of bills coming. They're telling me, no, it's more like August 15th. I can't really complain about that. That's the nature of the work. They want to finish the show earlier rather than later because it's less money for them. My goal is to get hired for the next season. So if I can race with them to work myself out of a job, yes, that's what I have to do so that I get hired for the next season. The next season is going to start sometime in October. They haven't told me yet. Why? Because they're making up their schedule. Mm-hmm. So I'm leaving this show around August 15th. I know that I'm going back to this new show because they're asking me about whether I need 1 week or 2 weeks off at Christmas because they'd like me to work. So that means I think they're going to hire me back. So they'll probably hire me sometime in October, beginning of the month, towards the end of the month. I already started looking for work. I found 4 to 5 weeks of work doing a reunion episode for a show I can't reveal. But that's going to start in about 2 weeks. I think I can squeeze out maybe one more week of work by just saying, hey, I'll work for half or I'll do this because I'd rather get some money coming in the door. I'll have at least 5 to 10 days of working days off. I'll do 4 to 5 weeks of this reunion show. And it's a little too early, but I have to then try to fill 2 to 4 weeks in October of work freelance, maybe a commercial, maybe a short episode, maybe doing notes on another show so that I can fill that hole until the new show starts. And that's literally what's going on with my life.
Well, I just bring that up so that the audience can understand that because Donald is one of the people who invented this whole thing of unscripted television. And that's how the thing goes. But if you do a good job and you devote your life to it and your reputation is out there as doing good work, I have no doubt. I mean, I sometimes forget which, when I talk to Donald, I kind of forget which shows he's working on because it seems like he's always working on different shows. And so I just put that out there because it's interesting. And Donald is editing right now, but he's been a showrunner. He's been a producer. He writes books. I mean, Donald, what else have you done? I mean, you've done, I would guess you pretty much done all of the positions on a typical TV crew for the most part. You might not have held the camera, but.
I mean, that's pretty much the only thing I really haven't done is hold the camera. And I do have this consulting business, bullseyeconsulting.org, that I'm going to, during my break time, go out there and try to, you know, get my client list for that up and running. Because I do have people who hire me to do, you know, coaching for them or try to run boot camps to help their productions run more efficiently. So I'm going to try to get that off the ground. I'm also going to start catching up on my next book that I want to write. So this is where what you and I call the side hustle. We're trying to make our side hustle our main hustle. That's everybody's got a side hustle. I'm also going to read a book that I'm holding in my hand. It's backwards on your screen. It is Daisy Jones and the Six. It was a huge bestseller, and I think that you would like it. It's going to be turned into a series very soon. It might already be in production. This, can I read the synopsis?
Please.
To you? Daisy's a girl coming of age in LA in the late 60s, sneaking into clubs on the Sunset Strip, sleeping with rock stars and dreaming of singing at the Whiskey a Go-Go. Her voice is getting noticed and she has the kind of heedless beauty that makes people do crazy things. Also getting noticed is The Six, a band led by the brooding Billy Dunn. On the eve of their first tour, his girlfriend, Camilla, finds out she's pregnant, and with the pressure of impending fatherhood in frame, Billy goes a little wild on the road. Daisy and Billy cross paths when a producer realizes the key to supercharged success is to put the two together. What happens next will become the stuff of legend. The making of that legend is chronicled in this riveting novel, written as if it were the oral history of one of the biggest bands of the 70s. In Daisy Jones and the Six, Taylor Jenkins Reid brilliantly captures an unforgettable place and time in an utterly distinctive voice. So I'm looking forward to this book.
It's so they're like making a movie.
They're making a TV series, a streaming series of it. And it's sort of like The Six, Billy Dunn is supposed to be more like a Bowie character. And she's supposed to be more like a, you know, I'm not sure, a bit more of a singer-songwriter. And the
Stevie Nicks or Linda Ronstadt or something?
Like a Linda Ronstadt ends up meeting like a David Bowie character, and somehow the two of them create magic together. So I'm looking forward to reading it, and well, I'll keep you posted about the book and like what I know about the series.
Well, I can tell you guys, you should check out Donald's Bullseye thing, because, and Donald already knows this, but if people ever come to me and say, hey, Michael, we want to do something creative like a podcast or a TV show or something, the first person I'm calling is Donald. And he knows that. It's like, because Donald writes great, I don't write so great. It's like, I'm great with ideas, but it's like, Donald, I'm telling you people, if you want to reach out to Donald, you should, because he is the absolute first person that I would go to ask to work with me on a creative project. And that's the truth.
Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. I really do. And I can say the same about you and your, I wanted to ask you,
hit me.
Is it giving away too much when we're talking about the latest horror movie called, it's the one word, Nope.
Nope.
Okay. So can you reveal, do you mind revealing the alien situation? Because I know that on previous podcasts,
have you seen it yet?
You have done. I have not. I don't know if I'm going to.
Okay.
So well, first of all, you've done this story.
Well, okay, so let me just say this. So my daughters and their boyfriends went to go see it, and they were big Jordan Peele fans. I've only seen the first one, which the name escapes me, prior to this one.
Get Out.
I saw that. Oh, I saw that.
Us. And Us is the other one.
Which Us. I have not seen. So my daughters are big fans of his work. And I saw it first. And then the girls saw it. And I was like, what do you guys think? And they laughed. And Zoe, my youngest daughter, thought it was better than the middle film. Nico really liked it. Ladies and gentlemen, it ain't a UFO. And because I don't want to be that guy. Oh, Michael Parker spoiled it for everybody. You know, I don't want to be that guy. And if you look deeply in my work, yes, you will see the answer to what it is. I hope, and I like to think, because Jordan Peele's a smart guy. And if I had to write a movie, if somebody said, Michael Parker, Donald Bull, we need a brand new conspiracy movie. We need a science fiction movie right now. We're going to take a chance on you guys because you know about this. First thing I do is troll all of the, I don't mean to say troll. I would dig back into the conspiracy theory forums. I would go into paranormal forums. I'm pretty sure that's what Carter did on the X-Files before there was an internet. He would go to the bookstores and, you know, because it's all there. All these good ideas that you want to translate into movies, somebody's already written them down. And if you look into my work, you will see what is the centerpiece of that movie, because I have done some shows on it. And I hope that the man maybe saw the interviews. And actually, I can't say it was my work. It was the work of someone else who I did a television show with. He brought the idea to me and it was exposed it to me. I will say Charles Fort, the Fortean writer, he touched upon this idea as well. So I don't want to spoil it, but it ain't a UFO. Well, it's not metallic. That's all I'll say.
Okay. I know we're running out of time, but you know, I love the movie Arrival, which was a couple of years ago.
And great film.
A great film. And one of the other things, and I've read a Beautiful. Bunch of sci-fi and short stories. And one of the things that they emphasize is that, you know, because of Star Trek and because of other movies, we have this idea that aliens are going to be an anthropomorphic version of ourselves, right? You know, when it's much more likely that an intelligent alien force will have evolved completely differently. And there's another conscious source of master consciousness on the planet, which are whales and cetaceans, and they don't have arms or legs and they're communicating telepathically all the time. And it's just as likely that those aliens would come and be in that form or in virus form, or they could be in some sort of like adaptive form. If there's no indication that they even need to have a metallic spaceship to show up. Okay.
Donald, we need our own.
You're being very silent.
We need our own Coast to Coast AM, and we'll just talk about these things. Ladies and gentlemen, we're running out of time. I always have fun on Fridays talking to Donald because we're dreamers at heart, and we get to talk about fun things. And Donald, once again, remind everybody where to find Bullseye, where to find your books, find everything Donald Bull.
You can find me at bullseyeconsulting.org, one word, Bullseye Consulting. You can also look up QuintanaAdventures.com for the books. And that's me.
Donald, thank you so much. Always enjoy it. And if you ever think to yourself, Michael, man, I'm a little burnt, can't do it this Friday, you tell me. It will not hurt my feelings, I understand. But as long as you can, you are welcome here. Donald Bull, ladies and gentlemen. This is a Friday on TNT. It is deprogrammed. We're going to get back to brass tacks here in a minute. We're going to talk economics in the second hour. And I got a little quiz for you guys. What is a SCIF? S-C-I-F. We'll reveal that later because it's going to be critical. All right, you guys, we'll be back.